Content warning. This episode contains swearing and crude language, brief discussion of anti-immigration policies and mention of the Holocaust, sex jokes, and, as always, frisk analysis and gay shit. Big thanks to Danny the Spoonlord and Janiyah Riley, our Masters in Hussian Analysis recipients on Sponsus. That's right, we're on Sponsus now. Link in the description. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Our intro theme song, Sunbanger, is by @_tittle on Instagram. Our outro theme is by JoJo Funk McLovin, who can be found at funkmclovin.bandcamp.com. Enjoy the episode! Shrek class spectating notes again.
I've got mine!
Real header that I put on my notes. Shrek class spectating notes.
Shrek spectating.
I just put the word Shrek on mine.
Luckily, my dead name isn't Fiona.
I saw this movie in theaters 20 years ago.
Shrekspert.
Yeah, you fucking nailed it, buddy.
Nailed it.
Fucking nailed it.
And welcome to Will It Homestuck, a podcast where we put media in the Homestuck blender to see what comes out. I'm Bucky, and I use he, here, or they, them pronouns, and you can find me at radicallydifferent.space.
My name is Janiyah Riley. I use she, her pronouns, and I can be found at @altuniversewash on twitter.com.
My name is Kelso. I use they, them pronouns, and please do not find me.
All right, we are back for season 2 of Will at Homestuck. We are cramming more stuff in this blender, and we are pushing the various speed buttons to see if we can get the little chunk stuck at the bottom. This week, we're covering Shrek, which is a 2001 movie by DreamWorks. If you don't know that, pause the fucking podcast and go watch the movie. I can't abide by people who haven't seen Shrek in 2021 in this, the 20-year anniversary of Shrek.
Right, the movie is 2 decades old.
Wow.
I was realizing that the other day when I was searching it to like download and I saw like Shrek parentheses 2001, mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, that's, huh, we're 20 years ahead of that, aren't we? There's a 2 in our current year.
This movie came out before I was in college, so.
I was 4.
Wow, 6 years old.
It came out in the summer.
It came out in the summer,
I mean, it might
yeah.
have been before you turned 6.
It was after I turned 18, and I remember the theater I saw it in, only because it was the only theater I ever saw movies in, but yeah.
Based on the 1990 fairy tale picture.
Yeah, I actually read the book when I was a child, too. So.
April.
Yeah.
It came out on my mother's birthday.
What day in April?
April 22nd.
Okay, I had literally turned 18 the day before this movie came out.
Wait, sorry. It was released for one specific theater on April 22nd.
Okay.
The United States, it came out on May 18th.
Oh, okay. Just kidding. I was well into my first month of being 18 by that point.
Cameron Diaz.
It's got an all-star cast, too.
Yeah, it does.
Mike Myers, Eddie Murphy, Cameron Diaz, and John Lithgow is Farquhar.
Yeah.
Farquhar.
Which is definitely isn't fuckwad.
Right, exactly. It's not that word at all. This is a PG-rated movie. We can't say that word.
There are so many moments where they're just making overt dick jokes.
I know.
Or like in the opening,
overcompensating.
Or like in the opening monologue, Shrek's like, ah, yeah, that's a bunch of like flushing noise, and like it just sounds like he's gonna say, ah, that's a load of shit. Like,
yeah, we need the uncensored Shrek dub that we're all craving.
We got explicit. Potential breakup song like 3 weeks ago. I think it's reasonable to say we could get an R-rated Shrek cut.
R-rated Shrek
cut. You only get one per year, sorry.
Uh-huh. Damn it. Potential breakup song was a pretty good one to pick, though.
So so we're not gonna see Shrek's, you know, anytime soon.
Somebody's upset about that, but it's not me.
I'm sure there's legions. It's not me either. There's legions of fan artists, I'm sure, that have filled that void in our lives.
Spray some Febreze around me in a warning way.
Yes. It's not good. I didn't say it was good.
God. Anyways, on a different topic, we should summarize the movie Shrek.
We should do that.
Summarize the movie.
Right.
It's a pretty simple plot. Like, there's not a whole lot going on in this movie. It just hits beat for beat pretty well.
It's a movie. It's a standard movie. If you've got your basic, like, you've got your gruff main character, and some bad stuff happens, and he doesn't like it, so he goes on a journey to try to make it not happen anymore, and falls in love, and a bunch of talking animals sing a song. And that's pretty much it. That's the movie.
God, yeah, Shrek. He lives in a swamp, and he likes a swamp, and then there's a metaphor for mass migration and displacement of certain minority groups.
Right.
That's like, God, what were some... I wrote a couple lines down that just, like, really... Oh, yeah, Farquaad mentions moving the fairy tale creatures to a resettlement facility.
Yeah, like, there was a lot of very, like, overt a Holocaust imagery, for lack of a more tasteful way to put it.
If not that, then just, like, I know this was in 2001.
Right.
There's a lot of different groups it could be commenting on, but, like, right. God, it says something about an eviction notice. There's stuff, there's, like, a bunch. It was a hodgepodge of a bunch of different imagery for minority groups who had been displaced in some way, which is a lot of them, if not all of them. And it was all mushed together. It was just, like, sort of... It was, like, sort of uncomfortable. Shrek is a metaphor for something, but it is a little all over the place in what exactly it wants to be a metaphor for, it feels like.
I feel like it's very, like, it's got that very, like, late 90s parody movie feel, where it's, like, they're trying to satirize something, but they're not even sure exactly what it is, so it's just kind of, like, it's like a shotgun of everything, and it, I don't know. Like, beat for beat, it's a plot, but it doesn't work very well. Like,
but, and it sort of does in the sense that what works is, like, we 22 decades, 2 score after Shrek has been released. That's not how scores work, is it?
No.
That's 100 years. 200 years on this, the 200th anniversary of the release of Shrek. the tropes have been around for a while, but like that Shrek as an anti-hero hero protagonist was kind of fresh in 2001.
Yeah,
like, fuck, this came out in May 2001.
Right,
this movie almost would have set a trend for protagonists.
Yeah, like it's definitely, it's easy to forget with all the stupid memes and everything that when this movie came out, it was actually pretty unique, and like a lot of movies copied it afterwards, but like, yeah, it did a kind of a unique thing, and like some of the references and gags were pretty, all of them actually were pretty fresh at the time. It's just that, you know, they've been done to death. It's been 20 years, so
The Matrix was 2 years old when this movie came out.
Yeah, no, like that was a fresh reference, like
it was a topical reference.
It
kind of makes the Rocky Horror Picture Show reference in 2 a little worse, because that was a little bit older.
Yeah.
And nobody except that was a clear parent stamp joke.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, old people.
Shrek, watching it, it really felt like it was made for teenagers, but had to be marketed
for kids.
6-year-olds,
I think
that's... I don't know how else to put it.
No, that's accurate. And, like, seeing it as a newly minted 18-year-old, I was like, hey, this movie is pretty fucking funny. Like, that... It had that crude humor that was, like, at the time still felt fresh, like it hadn't been overdone by 4 Shrek movies and countless parodies. So, yeah, it was actually quite good. And it still holds up pretty well. It's still a good movie.
Yeah.
The original voice actor for it was supposed to be Chris Farley,
yes,
but he had actually passed away So they chose Mike Myers after him. So if you can only imagine what the movie would have been like if Chris Farley were still alive.
Oh my God. I think I've heard that before.
I think about that.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah.
It would be different.
Yeah, they had to like strap. They had to pretty much remake the whole movie because of his passing, essentially.
Oh wow!
Because yeah, but fun fact, Shrekspert.
Shrekspert.
Yeah, you're. Fuck, I didn't mention this at the top, but Kelso is now basically my neighbor. You've been my friend since we met on Tinder in college.
Yeah. And here we are.
Here we are, making a Homestuck podcast.
Yay.
With the premise of an essay that got me into college.
You had me at Shrek, though.
I did have you at Shrek. I literally was like, yeah, we're just going to do Shrek. And you were like, you need to let me. I watched it yesterday.
Oh, literally, I did, though.
Yeah, you had me at talking to a microphone for 2 or 3 hours. Yeah, plot summary though.
Yes, plot summary.
Yeah, like it's basic hero's journey kind of thing. Shrek's in the swamp. You got all the weird relocation metaphors. He goes to find out what's going on. There's the Duloc, which is like a Disneyland ripoff with Farquaad, who I think is based on like one of the Disney people, right?
Yeah, because Jeffrey Katzenberg was one of the producers of this movie, so this is a fuck you to whoever Jeffrey Katzenberg didn't like at Disney.
Oh yeah, he hated them. Really fucking hated them.
and then there's that wonderful scene where Shrek battles all those knights.
Yes.
And like he plays the heel, basically. Like they're literally in a boxing ring, he plays the heel and he's still the hero, and then he wins.
Right.
And it's just, I was like, wow, this movie's clever.
Right. He's like the Rock or something, where he played the heel character, but everyone loved him.
Yeah.
Like and then they go to the castle and they rescue Fiona.
And Fiona wants this story to be normal so bad, and Shrek's like, I can't be normal. Right. I'm so sorry. I'm neither cisgender nor heterosexual nor normative in any way, shape, or form. I'm here to fuck your story up. I'm Shrek. Shrek is a metaphor for everything that isn't heteronormative or assimilationist. Right. And really, that's why Shrek is a true American icon, because Shrek isn't about assimilation. Shrek is about embracing who you are with all of your layers.
Nice. All of your layers. Because queers also have layers.
Yeah, like onions.
Right.
Like onions. Or a parfait. Everybody loves a parfait.
Yikes. Fiona wants everything to be normal, but it will not be normal.
Right.
And then she significantly delays their trip back to Lord Farquaad because she is cursed, and she's the bearer of the curse and is an ogre at night, but only nighttime right now.
Right.
And then there is a typical dramatic irony misunderstanding. Hey, you know in like 10th grade when you're learning about dramatic irony and you're like, this is never going to be relevant to my life.
Right.
A coherent example of dramatic irony is when Shrek overhears only a portion of the conversation between Donkey and Fiona.
Right.
Now you understand dramatic irony.
Right, we're going to use Shrek for literary analysis now. It's a masterclass.
Yeah. God. But that's the thing, this plot is really simple.
Yeah,
they pared it down to the bare fucking bones, and it just zips by, and it works.
It's not a long movie. Like it's like 90 minutes long, and it goes by very quickly. None of its scenes like linger for very long. Like I know we were talking about it like last night, I think, and commented that like Shrek and Fiona go from like I don't like you very much to like, yeah, I love you in like 10 minutes. But like, that kind of fits the pacing of the movie. Like, it's just that kind of movie.
It's literally a fairy tale. It's a subverted fairy tale, and it pulls it off really well.
It does.
Because, like, after the dramatic irony misunderstanding, it's pretty much all falling action from there. Like, Shrek rides back. He continues to be misunderstood. Fiona is like, hey, guess what? I will just show you what the fuck is up, because we timed this really well.
Right.
And then everybody gets what they want, except for Farquaad, who is eaten.
Yep.
Whole.
Yep.
And died on screen.
He gets vored.
I didn't say it.
I know you didn't. I'm the furry on this episode.
Ah, that's true. Fuck, okay. And then How do we go this long without mentioning Donkey?
Donkey.
Eddie Murphy did a really good job with that character. Like, I know the, like, references to it and general, like, Donkey in general over the course of four movies got a little old, but, like, in Shrek 1, it was, like, really funny and genuinely charming.
Pretty fresh.
Yeah.
Surprised that they got away with saying the word ass.
Yeah, I mean...
That genuinely shocked me.
But, you know, it's the proper term and with, like, exactly. animals.
It is. I just didn't... I was like, oh, fuck. Let him say fuck. Let Shrek say fuck.
Let Shrek say fuck.
Let Shrek say fuck. If it was a PG-13 movie now, they'd get one.
They'd get one. Challenge for listeners. If you're in our Discord, hey, join our Discord at the link in the description. If you're in our Discord, put in the current episode channel where in Shrek 1 you think there should be one fuck.
You use it wisely.
Yes, you get one.
Get one. And it cannot
you
be
are
sexual.
Upgrading Shrek. You are, for the 20th anniversary remaster, you are allowed one fuck in Shrek. Where do you put it?
Shrek squared beyond Shrek. Shrek says fuck.
Hey, you no, both of you saw this. We drove by a funeral home that had the tagline beyond funerals beyond today. Funerals. And I lost my mind.
Oh my god. That is a bad tagline, like even if it wasn't a Home Stuck Squared reference.
No. Alright. That was enough of a summary, I guess. Yeah. Watch the fucking movie.
It's not a complicated movie.
Just watch the movie if you haven't, and if you have, watch it again. It holds up.
It does hold up.
It's 20 years old. It holds up. It is an American classic. That shit is vintage.
That shit describes America.
It's good, and it's got a really interesting story behind it with, like, the studio drama and everything, so, yeah.
Also, the F looks like the Facebook F, and it's really funny.
It is very funny.
For Farquhar. Because I don't think in 2001...
Facebook didn't exist in the... I don't think it existed at all, or it was just a seed of an idea in What's-His-Face's brain, so... Like, not even a startup, It was that thing that they made at, like, Yale or whatever the fuck it was.
Harvard.
Oh, was it Harvard? Okay. One of those... You know, fancy.
One of them.
You know, Ivy League white person schools.
It's all school.
So, the main event.
The main event.
We are class specting. Who do we want to start with?
Do we just want to start with Shrek?
Welcome to my swamp.
Yeah, let's start with the main squeeze himself.
Yeah, go for it.
Shrek-tastic.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a last name.
He doesn't.
And the movie's his first name, so I can't even call it Shrek, because that's just dumb.
No, he's mononymous.
Yeah.
Like Mario.
No, Mario's last name is Mario.
That movie,
Mario.
That movie was not canon. The Mario epilogues.
Mario.
Beyond Nintendo. Okay, I guess I'll go first. Yeah. I have given Shrek a canon classpect.
Uh-huh.
He starts pretty isolated, and he starts out very happy to be isolated. And he ends up with more of a family than he expected. He sort of has to learn to not be so... He's very insecure. He is, like, blindingly insecure with being an ogre and being an outcast and being a minority. I know that there's, like, hashtag lore later, but we only see one ogre that isn't a human cursed to be an ogre, and it's Shrek. So that's kind of sad if you think about it. He's continually pushing Donkey away. He thinks that Fiona couldn't possibly like him. Plays the heel in the fight, but wins. He has a lot of responsibility thrust upon him that he does not want, and he is sort of forced to play within a system, but it does ultimately end up working out in his favor, at least at the end of this movie. I put him as an heir of doom.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, so I also gave him a canon classpect, but I took it in a slightly different direction. So I was also looking at his role as like an outcast. He is unique among his kind. We don't see any other ogres. He's very standoffish. He pushes people away. He has a lot of responsibilities that are thrust on him. People look to him as a kind of, almost like a leader, but he doesn't really know what to do with that. So looking at similarities to both like class and aspect, I saw a lot of blood coding as far as like loyalty and bonds and everything. Like he is shown to be a very loyal character once he starts to establish those bonds.
No.
and I had
I'm
him
going to eat you alive.
You know exactly where I'm going with this. I had him as a knight of blood. He's just Carcat. He's just Carcat. Durstream. I think he's a Durstreamer, personally. But yeah, he's Carcat.
Oh my god, it's all coming together. Momo's art of big Carcat. Shrek. It's all coming together.
It's
increased
all
crab.
Connected.
Oh, increased crab. Crabbing intensifies.
God damn it.
Well, wait, let's see what Kelso has to say first.
Yeah, all right.
So I'm new at this whole classbacks thing, but I do agree that Shrek is pretty much like an outcast. He like pushes people away, and that's just kind of how he's like used to it. He's lived his whole life all on his own. And I came up with Mage of Rage.
Rage player also good, I think.
Yeah, I was very tempted to go with Rage player because like he's very angry like all the time, but to me that felt like a not necessarily innate to him, but more of like that's his response to the circumstances. And if we remember correctly, another character was very angry all the time, Carcat.
You can't see it, but I'm doing finger guns right now.
What's really funny is that Shrek is in Homestuck.
Yeah, I know.
There's a Shrek sprite that Aridin rides in the final flash. So Shrek is Aridin's dad.
Right.
Excuse me?
Yeah, Shrek is Aridin's dad.
Oh my god.
Because the sprite doesn't have any like coloring, so it looks like a Lucis.
That's so fucking stupid.
You know, this is Shrek's world, and I am just living
it. Oh, I want to go back to when everything was green. Remember that? Remember when products were green?
Yeah, I do.
Remember you could purchase green?
I'm waiting for the Shrek ranch.
You remember Shrek Twinkies, Jane?
You remember Shrek Twinkies, Jane? Remember Long Cat, Jane?
I do remember Long Cat. I'm old enough to remember that.
I also remember Long Cat. It wasn't that long ago. Remember? Fuck. I can't argue with Knight of Blood Shrek. Like, I can't.
I know.
Yeah, where's my fucking pencil? I need to write down. I had originally put the story as being on the axis of doom and life, where it was, like, in between, like conformity to a system and, right. Like, growth and power. But I think blood to life might be the aspect of, like, family and community and, like, found family and the people that you choose and the bonds that you have against growth and power.
I think that might work. I have some thoughts on that when we get to Farquaad, but we can talk about it when we get to him.
Oh yeah, what other quotes do I have? I don't care about what everyone likes. Like that specific bit where Shrek was like, I am like an onion, I have layers. And Donkey says,
right.
Oh, you know what else has layers? Cakes. Cakes have layers. Everybody likes cakes. And Shrek is like, no, I'm comparing myself to an onion because onions are smelly and repulsive like me, a smelly and repulsive ogre. Right. And then and how dare you compare me to something that everyone else likes? I couldn't possibly be something everyone else likes. Because he's got the same fucking like, I'm an outcast, I'm horrible, I'm awful, nobody could ever like anything that Carcat has going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. Except instead of being a mutant blood color, he's an ogre. But same vibe, just a little different.
I agree with this.
What Dreaming Moon, though? I said Durst. He kind of gives off that vibe. I don't know. I don't remember what Dreaming Moon Carcat was, to be honest. Was he Durst?
Carcat was Prospect. I do think Durst is right because he has because of the anti-hero vibe he has going on. Because he's an atypical protagonist. Usually you would have a Prospect Dreamer as the protagonist because they're like bright and shiny and they put up a good front. And Shrek does put up like a front of humor when he's in a situation that makes him uncomfortable. Like, you can watch him visibly put up humor to cope on screen. But, so I think Durst.
Yeah, like, I think he has that, kind of introspective nature that Durst streamers tend to have. He just does.
Yeah, he enjoys spending time by himself.
He definitely
he likes
does.
Having his little date with himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Shrek has a date with himself every night, and he loves it.
Shrek's very big on self-care.
Sir, I'm just saying, all I can think of is dinner with myself. I can't cancel that again. It's like literally Shrek.
Yeah.
That's good.
All right. We got to do Donkey.
We got to do Donkey next. All right.
We got to do Donkey next. The first note I have is sidekick TM. I thought this particular quote was very telling of Donkey as a character. What's the point of being able to talk if you have, if you gotta keep secrets? Like, that just really sums the dude up for me. He is unflappable. He is somehow incredibly sexual. He is musical. He's always singing. They just, I wonder how much they let him ad-lib and how much they wrote, because it's Eddie Murphy, and they probably were just like, we know we can just let you loose, dude.
Yeah.
This is a couple of years after Mushu, right?
Yeah, a few years, actually.
Yeah, so they're just like, we know that you can do this. Yeah. They just let him loose. He sort of, Eddie Murphy at least sort of became this character in the zeitgeist the way, unfortunately, as much as he hated it, Antonio Banderas became Puss in Boots.
Yeah, well, he can die mad about it, so.
Yeah, that was a good role, actually.
That was
actually
a good role.
Spy Kids, too. He killed in Spy Kids.
Yeah.
Oh, he kills in anything. It's Antonio Banderas.
This is true. Okay. Donkey is desperate for companionship and help. He is incredibly emotionally open. He does not understand constellations. He does not. Abstract concepts are not something for Donkey. Secrets? No. Constellations? No. Lying? He can, but, like, usually he just prefers to distract.
Right.
He acts as an emotional torpedo for Shrek and Fiona. He just drills down right into the core of whatever issues they're having. It's like, I'm going to splash around in here with my stupid little hooves. Are you ready? So I was telling Janaya that I picked a class spec for one that was one of our friend's class specs for one of the characters.
Uh-huh.
So not only am I rolling out a new classification system here on Will at Homestuck, I would like to say that not only is Donkey a Cronus, but he's also a Bard of Heart.
Oh, God fucking damn it. I can't argue with that. I'm going to give my reasoning, but, like, that's so fucking
this
good.
Donkey has a codpiece, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Shut up.
I had, like, okay, he's also very about loyalty, like Shrek is. He is very friendly. He's very outgoing. He's very outgoing, very positive. Like you said, he doesn't lie. He tries to distract. He ends up saying some weirdly insightful things, even though he's portrayed as kind of goofy. And also I saw that he had he's a very long period of development. Like, you see him in the beginning where he's kind of like trying to find his footing, both literally and metaphorically. And then he gets more and more like confident as the movie goes along and kind of like fills into this role that he has in the story. So I had him actually as, I had him as a page, and I had him as a page of hope. So I class-spected him as Jake English and a prospect dreamer. So just Jake English across the board. The thing is, I really like the Bard of Heart thing, and it even fits in with his kind of like unintentionally fucking things up. No, he's the Bard of Heart. You got this one.
The, like, passive destruction for everyone right. else's benefit. He's constantly destroying things. Like, that's why I said yeah. emotional torpedo. Like, he yeah. literally just keeps going, well, why, until, like, they get to the bottom.
No, you're right on that one. You're right.
And also, my Cronus classification system. I'm working out the kinks here, but Cronus Ampera. It's the everything. It's the musicality. It's the, like, tinge yeah. of desperation. Donkey's not a greaser, but, like, he's got all the weird anachronistic references, so that's, yeah. I think, counts for him.
And you cannot look at that donkey and tell me that he's straight. No way in hell. That is a bi donkey.
No, that donkey is bisexual.
I mean...
Kelsa just looked off into space and blinked a lot, I think.
I could feel my soul leaving my body.
You're just rebooting a little bit. It's okay.
I had, like, the rainbow wheel, like, just, like...
they sure put donkey dragon hybrids in front of our faces in subsequent
they
movies.
They did do that. I am not gonna lie, I was thinking about the mechanics of that when they first met in that movie, and I'm like, how the fuck does that work?
Well, you know the vampire lady from Resident Evil?
Oh my god.
I'm gonna date this god. Episode quickly.
Just one big old wink.
Just there's one 9 foot. No, they're just Morticia Adams and Gomez Adams. Like, there's it's just boss wife and male
exactly.
wife.
It's crossover.
Boss girl and male wife. Exactly. There we go. Yeah. Except we don't get, like, we don't get a lot from the dragon. Like, I don't get a lot of boss girl from the dragon. I get a lot of desperation.
She's a whole ass dragon. What are you talking about? Not the boss.
I mean, yeah, like, everybody's scared of her, but she's also like, please love me. She's like a big puppy.
That is true.
She's like a big guard dog.
She's got like one compliment. She's like,
she's a big pit bull.
A big pit bull.
None of the characters in this movie are white.
I have commentary when we get to dragon, because I just realized something about my class acting, but I'm curious what Kelso has to say, because they didn't meet Cronus, so they don't have that bias.
That's true.
Yet.
I will get to it eventually. To come from the procrastinators.
You won't survive meeting Crow without being forced to interact with Curtis Ampera.
You will be indoctrinated.
Curtis Ampera. Luckily, the man has not manifested physically in my home. Fish are manifesting physically in my home.
I love fish.
Thanks, dude.
Hey, welcome to the middle of the episode. This is the bit where I tell you about some cool projects we're aware of, let you know if anyone has any projects they want to share with us, and give you a little spiel about what Will at Homestuck does besides this podcast. First, if you weren't aware, we stream fanfiction from Homestuck and other fandoms every Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time or 4:30 p.m. Pacific Time on our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/WillAtHomestuck. I also try to do a chill Stardew Valley or Minecraft stream on Wednesday mornings, and we do Homestuck fan games like Distant Quest and Befriend Us when they release. Find our full schedule at our website at willithomestuck.com. Next, here's some projects we like, and an ad break if we have a sponsor. Hey you! Yeah, you! Are you hungering for more Ancestors content? Do you really want to just play a visual novel about adult Homestuck characters for once? Does the idea of revolution and friendship grip your heart like a good story? Why not check out Distant Quest, a visual novel about experiencing the story of the Alternian ancestors firsthand? Download the game at distantpast.itch.io or follow the game at Distant Quest on Twitter and Tumblr. Do you like the Dancestors? Do you like fresh, fun, and detailed characterization? Did you think those things didn't go together and want to find out more? Well, let me introduce you to Befriend Us, the befriending friendship simulator where you, the MS Paint Adventures reader, befriend 12 trolls on the cusp of playing a game. Just the ones on Befferus this time. With 4 routes out now and 8 more on the way, plus intermissions and some secret diary entries, check Befriend Us out at spridersblock.itch.io or follow them on Twitter and Tumblr at Befriend Us. Have you found yourself wondering what might happen after the events of Homestuck, but don't really find the dubiously canon offerings appealing? Do you want more leftism in your Homestuck? Would you play a visual novel starring 4 lovable consorts? Well, do I have a game for you? Check out New Game Plus, a deep and richly characterized visual novel about the surviving Homestuck players on an Earth 5,000 years after the game has ended. New Game Plus is scheduled to release in October 2021, but you can find the teaser trailer and more information at the website, hsnewgameplus.com. The plus is spelled out. Remember, revolution is only the beginning. We'd also like to thank our class-specting undergrad, Sylph of Breath, as well as our Dreaming Moon scholars, Sina Mari and Space Cadet, for helping out the show on Patreon. If you'd like to get a shout-out on the podcast, access to bonus episodes and outtakes, and more, please visit sponsus.org/u/WillAtHomestuck. That's sponsus.org/U/WillAtHomestuck. And now, back to the episode. Okay, your thoughts on Donkey.
Oh, on Donkey. I 100% agree with the bard, but I chose Light for him because I think that he is unreasonably lucky. He is just disgustingly optimistic throughout the whole thing. Even when Shrek's like shitting on himself, Donkey's like, well, wait a second. No, like, you're a parfait. You are a cake. Like, he's just so incredibly nice to Shrek when like no one else would be, you know, because like, I feel like Donkey just has like just a heart of gold. Like, just he's just so nice.
He's the Reddit post. It's like, would you get me a little birthday boy? It's my birthday.
It's my
little birthday boy.
The thing is, that only strengthens my feelings on Bard of Heart. But part of that is because I know Crow, and that matches up really well. But also, like, I don't know. I think the Bard of Heart thing was really on the nose. Which, yeah.
Yeah.
My only argument against late would be that, like, as much as, like, they get like, luck and they get narrative focus, and Donkey also does drag the narrative off a couple of times. I think that he only gets more narrative breaking and narrative aware as time goes on, because he's another mascot character. Like, he's a character that, like, Olaf wishes that he had what Donkey
fuck
has.
Olaf.
Fuck Olaf. Because... Also,
yeah,
fuck Josh
definitely.
Gad, but please don't sue me.
this is only an opinion.
That's my opinion. That's my onion. It has layers. That's the only time I get to make that joke on this podcast when it's topical. But yeah, I just really think that, like, he is unreasonably lucky. And actually, I was sort of thinking, because that was bringing me back around on Janiyah's hope pick, because it's sort of like he bends the narrative to his will at times.
I will say, at one point, I did have him as a Bard of Hope. I just straight up had him as Cronus.
That is just Cronus Ampharos.
Yes, it is Cronus Ampharos Claspect.
There's one
reason I would say not Bard of Heart, and it's because I have another Bard of Heart.
Okay.
So, I don't know. Can we give Donkey Bard of Hope? Can we just make him Cronus?
Yeah, Bard of Hope, Prospect,
true
Cronus. Where, okay, so this is really funny because, I didn't give us, we didn't end up giving Shrek Heir of Doom. I was getting some Dancester vibes from this movie, but Bard of Hope and Prospect, which is actually the opposite of Cronus's Dreaming Moon too.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, he's definitely a Prospect dreamer, though. He's got that whole boundless optimism, don't think about my problems kind of thing.
Extremely Jake English vibes with the way he interacts with the dragon.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to have kids with you and leave. Except he doesn't actually do that, except Donkey is a much better father than Jake English could ever
Donkey
be.
Donkey is a much better father than Jake English could ever be. Yes, that is a true statement.
I'm sorry to the Jake
likers. He's not a good father.
Well, the thing about Jake Harley is that he had a bunch of children that he abandoned. And then the thing about Jake English is that he, in the original, did not have children. And in the one that I don't care about, at least tried to stick around for his children.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Jake Harley is... No, Jake Harley's a piece of shit. Jake English doesn't deserve to be compared to him.
I retract my apology to Jake Likers, because I think we got around to a point that I feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
You guys get enough today.
Can we talk about the dragon
We can
now?
Talk about the dragon now. We'll save Fiona for last.
Can I talk about the dragon first, because it's relevant to what we were just talking about?
Yes.
Okay. I had the dragon as being, like, I see a lot of similarities between her and Donkey, as far as, like, they both have that kind of vibe of, like, desperation and loneliness. The dragon is obviously a dragon who is very, like, protective and very protective of Fiona and her, like, her role in the castle and all that good stuff. But one of the things I thought I really picked up on was that the dragon's, like, loneliness and desperation are, as of the first movie anyway, very, like, unintentionally destructive. So I actually had the dragon as the Bard of Heart. But a Durst dreamer, not a Prospect dreamer. So, like, I saw a lot of that, like, we don't get much of the dragon, but, like, the dragon is shown to be a caring character later, but in the first movie, it's kind of twisted around, I think, because this is a character that's been isolated and, you know, cut off from everyone and made to fill this role that it doesn't seem like she really wants to. So you get that kind of, like, passive destruction aspect. I think it's tied into the heart aspect. That would be my take, anyway.
Yeah, because the dragon is as much a victim as Fiona is, because right. the dragon was also brought to the castle and is chained there as well. Like, right. she's also trapped there, and she probably doesn't want to be there. And I don't remember how much they actually played up a relationship between the dragon and Fiona. I don't think that they actually... I think they had, like, a distant relationship.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
I don't know. I was sort of kicking around some ideas... The way that she sort of behaved kind of reminded me of some characterizations we've seen of Aranya, so I actually made her a sylph of rage.
Interesting. I could kind of get behind that. I can see where you're coming from on it. I don't know, you get so little characterization of the dragon in the first movie.
Yeah, I'm almost tempted to say that she's, like, rage-coded and, like, more of in, like, a Lucis role or, like, a guardian role than a role that could be class-spected. And that seems, like, partially a cop-out, but also there's, like, three characters in this movie. There's four characters.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to say that's true for the first movie. Like, she shows about the level of narrative involvement that the Lucii do, and, like, she does very much fill that role. So, like, I don't know that we necessarily get enough from this movie, because, like everything with sequels, I try really hard not to let the sequels pollute the analysis of the movie, because we're not given the characterization from movies 2 through 4 where she's fleshed out as a character.
But we do find out she's a... Well, is she a MILF in this movie?
She
doesn't have kids yet.
No, she hasn't had kids.
Yeah, she doesn't have kids yet. Spiritually?
Yeah, spiritually. MILF.
You can be a spiritual MILF.
Yeah, she grows into the role. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's because she's big.
That's the key thing, apparently.
Yeah.
Same.
Let it out.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Then we got Farquaad or Fiona first.
I have somewhat interesting things for both of them. So either way.
Which one do you want to present first? Because I've presented two first, and you presented one first. You should at least present.
I would say Fiona. I think I think we'll go with Fiona, because I think I have a somewhat more interesting one for Farquaad.
Okay.
Okay, Fiona took me a while to nail down, actually, because, like, we don't get a lot of characterization from her at first. Like, she's very kind of, like, she's not blank slate, because there's obviously, like, a lot going on that we don't know about, but we don't know about it until about halfway through the movie. So, Dreaming Moon, I thought was pretty solid. She's definitely a prospect dreamer, definitely has that kind of, like, optimism, idealism, don't think about your problems, all that good stuff going on. Trying to figure out aspect, I ended up landing on rage. I think that she has a lot of that, like, rage in the sense of anger at the system that she's a part of, or the structure that she's forced to be a part of. Like, she appears to be very on board with it when we see her in the tower, but then it becomes very quickly apparent that she's not happy with what she's been forced into. So I think we get a lot of rage coding in that sense. Class was really hard for me. I almost had her as a sylph, but that didn't quite feel right to me. Like, it didn't seem like she was enough of, like, a supporting type personality, and she didn't really have any of the, like, passive creation going on. But the thing I did see is that she has kind of the longer development that we see with pages, but less so. And she definitely has that sense of, like, a person who has a specific role to play that they're not really a part of it at first, but then they kind of take it on as the narrative progresses. So I actually had her as an heir of rage.
I agree with you on the rage bit. Like, that seemed pretty solid. She's got, like, one, she's got Slate Momo vibes.
Yep.
That's part of where...
rage.
Momo's a rage player, rage. I know. Momo is a sylph of rage. But, like, just the... I don't know. She doesn't take any bullshit or what she thinks is bullshit. Even if she's wrong, she won't take what she thinks is bullshit. She's originally trapped in a fairy tale role that she thinks she has to fulfill because she's been waiting to be rescued forever, and that just seems like the only option. I think she's got eldest daughter syndrome out the ass. Like, having the responsibility of what your family needs you to be dropped squarely on your shoulders, and then just like, here, you have to deal with this trauma forever. Goodbye.
Ouch.
She warms up to Shrek after overhearing him talk to Donkey about feeling like people judge him, because she's literally, like, all she knows is that she was awful enough that her parents had to send her away, and then she's never seen anybody else in her life. So, I imagine she thinks she has issues with her self-image. She's incredibly comfortable with very gross things and things that are off-putting and subvert your expectations. She's very insecure, but also sort of stuck on the rules, and she can't think of herself as pretty or desirable as an ogre, because that's not how it's supposed to be. Like, she's very stuck on rules and having to break out of them. I don't know to what extent this has an effect on, like, her class, but I just thought this is interesting to note. We only see her magical transformation in full when she's going from human to ogre. Oh, we never see her go from ogre to that's human on screen. It's always cut away before we see her transform back into a human. Or not transform into a human. And then she becomes what subverts the plot and what she always was. She literally becomes the thing that fucks up the way that things should go. So I had her as a maid of rage.
Okay. Yeah.
I actually could see her as a Durstreamer to some extent, but she does also have some Jade vibes, which I think are giving me the Prospect stuff.
I, again, be interested to hear what Kelso has to say, but I kind of agree with the maid thing. I think that that's, she gives off some slight, like, handmaid kind of things going on there, which I think that's appropriate.
I got... Lord of Breath, because I found that she is kind of very controlling from the get-go, like, when they first, like, meet Shrek, like, this isn't how it's supposed to go, you're not my Prince Charming, blah, 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 can we, like, please stop for the night, like, I need to stop now.
She literally, like, holds up the plot.
Yeah, pretty much, and she tries to create this world that, like, was taught to her, and, like, she's so against what everything has happened, but, like, eventually does warm up to it.
Giving her a masterclass is interesting, because she's the only person in the plot who's actually royalty.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, and she's used to...
She's used to getting what she wants, even if it's contained within her situation.
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, she is pretty much, like, still royalty, and very much does act like it whenever they're, like, camping out. She's like, I need a door. you know what I'm saying? Like,
notably high class thing, doors.
Oh yeah, but she still, like, breaks out of, like, social norms, I guess, because she hasn't been around people. So when, like, they get when they meet, like, Robin Hood or whatever, she, like, kicks their ass. Like,
yeah, because she's just been teaching herself martial arts, or, like, she's not born stupid yesterday, or whatever that video essay was. She's definitely got a head on her shoulders.
Yeah, she
born sexy yesterday.
Born sexy yesterday. Here, let me hit you with this one, because I do, like, I like the whole, like, she takes this kind of, like, active control. I'm not sure if she quite goes to the extent that, like, a lord would, but what is the what's the active manipulation class? It's witch, correct?
Yeah.
What about
Jade
of
vibes.
Something?
Oh, Jade vibes. Witch of rage?
I can see the breath. I'm not sure if I'm getting enough, like, of the change and freedom part of it, but, like, I guess I could see the argument for breath. Witch of rage or witch of breath. I think I would be cool with either one.
I mean, she literally chooses ogre at the end.
Right.
And that's, like, the ultimate break of, like, freedom and individualism.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Did she choose over?
She chose Shrek over.
Yeah,
Farquhar.
Like, I always thought the implication was that she would take the form of, like, whoever she ended up, like, genuinely falling in love with. So, like, yeah, that was...
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I think I'm kind of sold on the breath aspect. Witch of breath. Yeah.
Prospect.
Got a June Harley going on, I guess.
Yeah, fuck.
June Egbert real,
I guess.
June Egbert real.
I mean, we've got a very, like, trans-coded type story going on there, so yeah.
The story's pretty transgender is the thing about it.
It's got a lot of transness.
I have no arguments.
My parents locked me up because of the thing that I become at night. I have to marry somebody who... I have to marry, like, the perfect... man at the top of society in order to fit in my role. Oh, The working class, lower class minority is like has come to show me what class consciousness is. I'm no longer going to identify as this is a Big Joel video. Like, I'm just describing the plot of Big Joel Shrek videos right now. Just watch Big Joel Shrek video.
Oh my god.
No, I know. It's a very good video.
Communism. Let's talk about Lord Farquaad.
Let's talk about Lord Farquaad.
Kelsa, do you want to go first for this one? Do you want to take a stab at going first?
I'm just going to run into this. He is also going to be a lord of just doom. He is very controlling. He's very short. He overcompensates for things. Because I think he's just very insecure.
A lot of insecurity in this movie.
I mean, he's probably the metaphor for insecurity. You can see it, like, in his size and, like, in his castle and everything. Like, when Shrek and Donkey walk in, like, Shrek's like, oh, do you think he's, like, overcompensating for something? And it's, like, all Farquaad everything, like you said earlier, is basically like a Disneyland, but instead of Mickey Mouse, it's Lard Farquaad. Lard Farquaad. And he really does kind of bring just a lot of, I guess, like, doom towards, like, the other characters. He makes a lot of the, I guess, side fairy tale characters, like, move out of his kingdom into this swamp. Like, that's very...
And specifically in a... Because Doom's, like... Doom's doom, but, like, systems and working within a system as well. And, like, he... Sorry, I'm interrupting you. I will have order. I will have perfection is what he's, like, shrieking when the wedding's going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a petulant little child who demands order at the expense of everyone else.
Law and order.
Law and order Shrek unit.
Is Shrek a cop?
No, he's not a cop.
No.
But he works for the government.
They don't even have dental.
Yeah.
Shrek is a working class union card carrying ogre.
Shrek is union all the way.
Shrek is American. Shrek would be born in the middle of the Appalachian Range. Shrek is a homegrown coal mining. I'm getting too specific.
That is very specific. I don't think he'd mine coal though. I think he would make wax like fucking candles.
Okay.
Anyway, now that we've written the Shrek fanfiction, let's get back to our other Shrek fanfiction. You said Lord of Doom.
Lord of Doom. Oh, yeah. That is what I came up with.
That's interesting. He hates fairy tale creatures ruining his perfect world, but he is willing to use them to his advantage. He wants to be king to have power, and plans to do so by marrying a princess, but, like, this is not for love or anything. He does not seem interested in romantic attraction at all. Like, once he decides that he's going to marry Fiona to get her power, that's when he starts finding her attractive after he's already found a use for her. And he won't even listen to what the mirror says about what's happening to her. And then... I know that we've been seeing this quote around a lot just because of, like, the world we live in, but, like, watching him unironically deliver the line, some of you may die, but that is a sacrifice I am willing to make, was just not this. The plot of this movie is so tight. There is no deviation, there is no meandering, there is just the characters... Say what the fuck is going on with their mouths. And I think the doom and the system stuff is really interesting, but I classified him as a life player because of the association with power and capitalism and rulers. He's the one who's like trying to be, he's literally trying to be in control of everyone else. He's trying to be a king. There's lots of working within systems while trying to subvert them, but, like, still in some way where they can remain within them, and the story somehow ends in a compromise, which is kind of where the plot starts to be fucky in the second movie, which is, like, it's interesting how this movie does have if you look at it on the surface, it resolves itself. If you dig a little deeper, you're like, wait, Fiona can't just go, like, this, she's still a pri- like, she's gonna have to go back. And then you're like, oh, wait, yeah, there's the sequel there hook! Sneaky! They did not need to have a post-credits scene, because the sequel hook is built into Fiona's backstory. Like, nice! No meandering! But basically, because he's, I gave him life, I made him a thief of life, because he is taking everyone else's resources for himself. And my apologies to Mina, but I think instead of being a Durst player, he's a Prospect player, because he's got everything sort of up front for him. He doesn't have anything up his stupid little sleeves. It's all laid out there. He's throwing a temper tantrum about it. It's Prospect player.
So I definitely agree with Prospect. That is really, like, dead on. I also had him as a lord. Like, I see him as being very, like, he wants to take control. He wants to be in charge. He's very, like, you know, he's very hands-on manipulation in the sense of, like, absolute control. But actually, so I went in a slightly different direction with his aspect, which is that I saw ultimately what he's trying to control and what he's trying to, like, manipulate isn't necessarily a system. It isn't necessarily, like, anything having to do with the actual kingdom. What he wants to control is the narrative itself. He wants to be able to have his world exactly the way he wants it, whatever that takes. Like, he wants to be the, you know, the king in the castle in the fairy tale. So I actually have him as a lord of light, where his, like, ultimate goal is to just be in total control of the narrative itself, to make whatever the hell he wants happen.
Yeah, yeah. Like the scene in the wedding where he has his goons holding up emotional cue cards for the audience to react to. That is a light player thing to do. You will react the way I say you will, because I wrote this, and this is the reaction it's supposed to elicit, because I'm the author.
Right, like, he's got, like, I totally agree with the stuff that y'all were saying. Like, he is, like, the some of you will die, I'm willing to make that sacrifice. Like, he will manipulate anyone else. He does control systems, but, like, what he's doing it in service of is just to have his own world. Like, he built this Disney-esque kingdom to completely control everyone's perception of who he is and his world. Like, that's what he wants the whole world to be. He wants the fairy tale creatures to be gone. He wants his little perfect, quote-unquote, perfect kingdom to exist. He wants to have his fairy tale marriage the way it's supposed to be in the narrative. Like, he wants to be the happily ever after in the fairy tale, just in, like, the worst possible way.
I mean, there's a reason that Rose lives in a mansion and Vriska lives in a mansion with a basement full of stolen gold. Like, the light players are also rich. They also get fortune. And the more money you have, the more fortunate you have, and the less everybody else has, because that's how capitalism works, and that's how feudalism works, and Farquhar's at the top of the... Like, this isn't... There are the trappings of capitalism in the sense that it is a Disney... Well, it's a DreamWorks movie that is attempting to clown on Disney, so there are some capitalistic elements, but it does still take place in a setting where, like, it's feudalism, and there's just a king, and that's just... And there's lords, and that's just how the land's parceled up.
Yeah, he just wants to be the king, and... control everyone else.
Fucking alrighty. That's the characters. That's the characters that show up in this movie that have any amount of significant characterization.
Yeah. I was going into this, I was like, maybe I'll do Gingerbread Man. I remember him being big in the second movie. He gets like three lines.
Not my gumdrop button. Look how he spits on him too. He's like, you can't make me talk.
This cookie is gay, and there's nothing you can do about it.
Cookie is gay.
I had Pinocchio written down, because I was like, I thought he had some lines in the first, but no, he has, like, two lines. It's all in the second movie.
I'm not convinced that Pinocchio and the Gingerbread Man don't have the same voice actor. Don't tell me if that's not true.
They very well might. I will look that up when we are done with this.
God. Okay, so shipping? So quadrants? So what can we even do with that?
I mean, like, I think there are some ships in this. I mean, you've got, okay, I'm going to say Fiona and Shrek are a pitch to red vacillation.
Yeah, yeah. There's sexual tension the whole time, but they hate each other first. I'll allow it.
Exactly.
I think, like, initially, Shrek has pitch feelings and Fiona has red.
Yeah.
Then she finds out he's an ogre and they, like, flip back and forth for a while. And then they finally get back around to red.
They're like a fucking badminton vacillation match here.
I'm really proud of you for pulling up the WikiHow on Homestuck Quadrants.
Yeah, there were plenty of other links I could have done, but you know what? The WikiHow, like, honestly, like...
That's better than trying to read Homestuck.com, yeah.
I have been writing so much quadrant shit lately, it is burned into my brain now.
I wish those nerdy little assholes that you would cringe at in high school that, like, were definitely doing this with real people in high school.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. I'm saying this so that nobody can, like, hold it against me later because I'm aware of it.
That's fine.
Donkey and Shrek are unhealthy ashen with no third leaf.
Yes.
To pale. Mostly unhealthy ashen. I don't think that they... I think even by the end, like, they're not quite... Like, they don't have a very good relationship.
No, not really. And, like, I can see where you're going with that, too, because, like, they're both, like, trying to solve the other one's perceived problems in an indirect way with no other party involved, which, like, that's the, like, definition of a failed auspiciousness. They're just really bad at it.
Yeah, like, they need somebody, like, they need Puss in Boots.
Yes.
They need Puss in Boots to come in and complete their relationship.
Yes, exactly.
They need Puss in Boots to come in and complete that relationship. Do I mean that Shrek, Donkey, and Puss in Boots are in a polyamorous, homosexual, queer platonic relationship? Yes.
Absolutely. I feel like that's just canon.
You're gonna kill me with your eyeballs one day.
I am. They're like little, like, daggers shooting through my pupils.
I can't see your eyeballs.
Do you have any hot quadrant takes, Kelsa?
Oh, no, I'm just here for the ride at this point, I think. Nice. I'm not a shipper.
That's fair.
Donkey and Dragon. That's an interesting
Donkey
one.
Donkey and Dragon.
Donkey is straight up afraid of Dragon at first, though.
Yeah, it's a one-sided red crush that turns into a red relationship by
yeah,
the end.
Because by the end, Donkey's like, all right, you're actually... You and I are also insecure because every character in this movie is insecure. And now that your vulnerabilities have been revealed to me, I can meet you on this plane as equals, even though you could crush me with your little finger.
Yeah, exactly.
So, because Donkey is actually just about 20 years ahead of all of the people who are thirsting after the 9-foot-tall vampire lady.
Right. Donkey knew what was up. Donkey.
Donkey knew what was up. Donkey literally sings I Like Big Butts in the second fucking movie. Like, Donkey knew what the fuck was up.
Donkey was the embodiment of the 1990s furry community.
Yes. Dump truck ass.
Dump truck ass. We love to see it.
What else have we got? We've got, I mean, Farquaad's got, I don't even think he's got a red crush on Fiona. He just wants to have the power of the relationship.
No.
Like, he doesn't seem to be capable of actually forming a relationship with other people, so.
Yeah, I could headcanon a relationship, like a pale relationship between him and one of his hooded goons, but, like, I don't have anything to base that on.
There's no textual evidence.
Yeah, I think fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
Now we just have the last and most important section.
Can I just come out and say it?
Yes.
There is no Vriska in this film. There's none.
Yeah, that was the conclusion that There's I came the, to.
Thank God, I was about to...
The only character that comes close is Farquaad, and I'm done with, like, weird dude Vriskas now.
He comes the closest, but that doesn't mean that he comes close enough.
Right, that's what I mean, yeah.
Fiona has some characteristics, but not enough. Notably, there's just no relationship with any other women because she's the only woman that has, like, a significant role in the film.
Right.
This movie does not pass the Bechdel test.
It doesn't pass the Vriska test.
Those are different things.
I know they are.
Wait,
are they?
You know, technically, in order for Vriska to have a close female friend that they have a relationship with, being able to diagnose a Vriska does mean that your piece of media does pass the Bechdel test.
That's true, yeah, because like they can't have just a conversation about some dude. That's not gonna satisfy the relationship requirement with a female friend. Yeah, I feel like ever since we did the audio piece on diagnosing the Vriska, I think I've gotten a little more like foot down as far as there just not being Vriskas in a lot of pieces of media. Like the close enough diagnosis doesn't feel right anymore.
Yeah, like I do even regret the like saying Brock Rumlow was the Vriska of Captain America the Winter Soldier as a joke, because like I don't remember if we brought this up in the part two episode. Natasha Romanoff is clearly the Vriska of the entire MCU. There just wasn't enough character of her in that one movie to like really pin that down, but like I don't know, putting fucking Rumlow in as a joke was only because I like made a very far stretched argument.
Yeah,
I don't know. I wanted to, now that since this is the first episode of season one, I have episodes planned out until July. Like I have 6 months of episodes planned, you know, because that's just the kind of person I am. It's all in a spreadsheet because that's the kind of person I am. You can see the spreadsheet if you join our Discord. Hey, join our Discord!
Yeah, do that.
But, like, one of the things I'm trying to do is to bring more pieces of media that, A, I am nostalgic for, B, other people will enjoy, C, have women in them, and maybe queer people. That would be cool.
We had, like, a couple that I did, because we had Westworld and we had Jessica Jones, that both had, like, really solid Vriskas. Like Maeve was the dreaming moon apart from being just straight up Vriska. So like, yeah, we got some real good ones.
And again, like those are just Jessica Jones and Westworld both have like solidly characterized complex women, which is also another thing that goes a long way towards that. Like I guess this will be kind of spoilers, but one of the pieces of media that I'm hoping to do this year is the novel Uglies by Scott Westerfeld, which I loved when I was younger. And it's I saw some writing recently discussing this as one of the few YA novels that just, there was no way for this one to be adapted into a movie, because the whole book is about, the whole series, it's a trilogy with like another book added on at the end later. It's about a society. There's the average people, and then there's the people who are lucky enough / rich enough to afford plastic surgery to make them perfect.
Right.
And there's just no way you can do a Hollywood high-budget movie about that, because your protagonist has to start out as Hollywood perfect.
Right.
Even if they're, like, supposed to be ugly, quote-unquote, or whatever. Like, they muss up their hair and put them in a ponytail, and the metaphor's gone.
Oh, like a 90s. It's like a classic 90s movie. Like, oh, she's a nerd, and then she goes through, like, a makeover, and then she's not a nerd.
Yeah.
And then she finds out that you only asked her out because it was a dare.
Characteristic,
not another teen movie.
Yeah, that one.
The hallmarks of true hideousness, like having brown hair.
Maybe even
brown eyes. And glasses. Forget about it.
Oh my god.
You have a minor disability. How dare you?
Oh,
I know.
Yeah, I don't wanna say close enough. I think just projecting, if we do Shrek 2, I think I might be able to make a convincing argument for the fairy godmother.
I think I could do the same. I feel like that might, we'll get to it when we get to it. I think there might be some complicating factors, but yeah, that's probably closer than anyone we got in this movie.
All right, well, we spent a long time on class specting, but I think that's good because like we really got to dig into a few characters. I like it when there aren't like 22 characters and I can just dig into like two or three.
There's a sweet spot as far as like, I think for me it's like six or less is pretty good. You get beyond that and you start just kind of like blasting through some of them.
Yeah, like that's when you need to have a separate dedicated lightning round session where you're like, this is my idea. Okay, next.
Yeah, that's when you get to be just like, fuck it, he's a Nacodile.
I love you, yeah. Lawrence. Lawrence,
it did make
better
sense, but that was partly a product of fuck it, he's a Nacodile.
Yeah, it's just like, screw it, there's too many. I can't spend time on
it's
this one.
It's a good
one,
show, but there's so many characters.
I think we did it. I think that was Shrek.
That was Shrek.
It was Shrek.
Hey, if you got to the end of this and you still were like, nah, I'm not going to watch Shrek again, just Watch Shrek again.
It's genuinely good.
It was it's good. It's actually a good movie. And like, I don't, it's not deep. It's just enjoyable.
It is.
It's a fun movie that'll take you the commitment of 1.5 episodes of a Netflix TV show. You'll be fine.
All you need is a brain cell and popcorn, and you are setty spaghetti.
Right. It's such easy watching. It's a lot of fun. And, like, as a product of its time, it actually did a lot of really, like, revolutionary stuff for like, that kind of movie.
All right. Well, I've been the timeline where 9/11 didn't irreparably alter the trajectory that Shrek took.
And I've been Fox in Boots.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for coming, everybody. We will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, follow us at WillItHomestuck on Twitter. If you want to support the show, check out our sponsors or Ko-fi, both of which are at WillItHomestuck. Don't forget to check out our weekly fanfiction streams at WillItHomestuck on Twitch, and you can even join our community streams the first Monday of every month. We're also streaming Stardew Valley or Minecraft on Wednesdays and the first for Friday. We're also streaming Stardew Valley or Minecraft on Wednesday mornings, and the first Friday of every month is our Discord community Jackbox Game Night. Come join us! Last night's was really fun. At any rate, we'll catch you next week for Puella Magi Madoka Magica with Kit, NPC Arts, and Nyx. See you then!